You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS.
And Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Thursday, January 10th, 2013. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, Kristen Gwynn from Alternet on this interesting story, horrible story in some respects, of a rape and the apparent cover-up that followed, and it's being exposed by Anonymous. Also on the program today, President Obama to nominate Jack Lew as the new Treasury Secretary, Hilda Solis, the Secretary of Labor, also stepping down. 2012, hottest year on record in the United States. More evidence of the implications of mercury in our atmosphere. Joe Scarborough turns out to have a little bit of a problem with the ladies. Dobson and Perkins, two right-wing fundamentalists, they just can't figure out what's going on in this country. And we'll get to that story about how a freshman congressperson spends their days. Before we get to Kristen Gwynn, this story I mentioned yesterday, and pretty important, and also some good news. Yesterday, the Daily News reported that the New York Police Department's stop-and-frisk policy, or at least one element of it, has been ruled unconstitutional by a Manhattan federal court judge. Shira Scheinlin, the Manhattan federal court judge, or one of them, ordered police to refrain from making trespass stops outside private residential buildings, even if the landlord has given officers permission to do so as part of NYPD's Clean Halls program. Now, again, a lot of this stuff we've got to see in light of the mounting evidence, and I think in some respects unequivocal evidence, that one of the major factors, if not the major factor, in the diminishing of crime in New York City, as well as around the country and in many respects the world, was a function of getting lead out of our atmosphere. All of these programs that the NYPD engages in, that emanated out of the broken windows policy of the early 90s, is premised on the notion that this type of extremely aggressive pre-crime police work, if you will, is the reason why crime has gone down in the city. And if that's not the case, the justification for this stuff, aside from the fact that it's probably unconstitutional, the justification from it falls away. The judge wrote in a 157-page ruling, while it may be difficult to say when precisely to draw the line between constitutional and unconstitutional police encounters, such a line exists, and the NYPD has systemically crossed it when making trespass stops outside of buildings. Essentially, the cops do is in about 8,000 buildings citywide, according to the New York City Civil Liberties Union, you've got cops who stop and frisk kids, teens, outside of buildings, just to make sure that if they're going in or out, that they're up to no bad, I guess. And this is, again, we've talked about stop and frisk on this program many times, but, you know, contemplate the idea of being a 15-year-old, a 16-year-old, a 17-year-old, a 14-year-old, 13-year-old, and knowing that you're going to get stopped by the cops on a regular basis and frisked just for being essentially a black teenager. And it's not just sort of the, hey, Billy, how you doing? Would you mind going up against the wall there so I can just pat you down? Great to see you. How's French class going? I mean, can you imagine, think about your life. If you were trained to believe that you were a suspect from a very young age, how would that implicate the rest of your life? How would that not change what you perceive to be your opportunities in this world? So good for this judge. And I hope the whole policy basically gets thrown out the window. I think it's the devastation that it wreaks on the psychology of these kids, I think, can't be underestimated. So good for this judge. And I hope we see more rulings like this. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Kristen Gwynn of Alternet on this really disturbing case out of Steubenville, Ohio. We'll be right back after this.
I turned my camera on. I cut my fingers on the way. On the way. The way of slipping away. I turned my feelings on. You made me untouchable for life. Yeah, yeah. And you wasn't alone. It hit me like a ton. You hit me like a ton. I turn my feelings on the side. Yeah, yeah. And like I'm gonna ignite. I saw them stars go up.
We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. Kristen Gwynn, an associate editor at Alternet. Kristen, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us, give us the background. I mean, Steubenville, Ohio, is a place that has had its share of controversy regarding police corruption in the past. I know that the Department of Justice had basically had done a year-long investigation in 1996, I think it was, with a ruling on misconduct involving the city police force and the city manager. Give us a little background about Steubenville, Ohio.
Well, it's a small town. I think the population is about 19,000. It also has a very good football team, the Big Red football team. And what people in the town are saying is that the football players, I guess, receive some sort of special treatment, even when it comes to allegations that multiple players were involved in a rape. The rape charges were filed against two players. The football coach actually didn't even bench them. So it all is kind of strange. And Anonymous is alleging that the football coach and the chief of police are also good friends.
All right. Well, so let's back up for a second. When did this alleged rape occur in Steubenville?
In August.
Okay. And it was a 16-year-old girl. Just walk us through the story about how Anonymous got involved in this and what had happened. How did those two football players, how were they first charged with this rape?
Well, what it seems like from piecing together reports from both the New York Times and the Anonymous leaks is that a girl who came from a neighboring town in West Virginia, a 16-year-old girl, went to go to these football parties at the end of the summer where a bunch of football players from Steubenville were celebrating. And she was unconscious or at least unable to walk. A couple of them, they took her to at least three different parties and sexually assaulted her at various locations. And one allegation includes a sexual assault occurring in a car while transporting her to another party. And there's pictures of people carrying her by her arms and legs. And the two boys in that picture were charged with at first kidnapping and rape, but the kidnapping charge has been dropped. So I believe now just rape and sexual assault charges. They're also saying that she might have even been urinated on at the end of the night when they dropped her off, or before they dropped her off, or that she had been lying unconscious on a lawn or something, and somebody decided to urinate on her. And it's all just really disgusting because it appears that a lot of people were there, and probably more than two people touched her, or at least didn't stop it and didn't seem to think that it was wrong.
All right. So how were the first two kids, these football players, how were they first charged? I mean, who brought those charges? My understanding is that she was not aware of what had happened until, because she had basically passed out from alcohol, I guess, was not aware of what happened until, what was it, that later she heard stories or she saw pictures? I mean, exactly what is the timeline here?
Yeah, I think in the days following the party, she saw pictures of herself and heard that people were talking, saying different things that had been done to her. And it wasn't until then that she was aware that anything had happened. And at that point, she and her mother decided to press charges. And that was still in August that this happened.
Okay. And then at what point did Anonymous get involved? I mean, and what ostensibly were the reasons why they got involved?
Anonymous didn't get involved until like late December, and the New York Times had written an article about a month before that I think had sparked some new interest in the case because the New York Times included some interesting details, including the head football coach saying, you know, you're going to get what you deserve, and if you don't, someone close to you will, kind of threatening a reporter who pressed him on deciding not to bench the players. But Anonymous just, I guess, also followed the blogging of Alexandria Goddard, who had been covering the story from the beginning on her website, Printingfield, and she was actually Steubenville native. So she was one of the first people to allege that there was corruption in kind of this small-town football fantasy.
I mean, the New York Times, I think, quoted another coach there, if I'm not mistaken, saying the rape was just an excuse, I think. What else are you going to tell your parents when you come home drunk like that after a night like that? This is a guy named Hubbard, I guess. She had to make up something. Now people are trying to blow up our football program because of it. I mean, this is just, assuming that there's, just even for the moment, that there's absolutely no corruption going on here, there is a real disturbing perspective on this from people who are ostensibly leaders and role models in this school and in this town. And so why did Anonymous, I mean, the New York Times article sparks this, reignites this interest in this case. Was there a sense that it was not being diligently followed up, or was it that the kids who were charged with these activities, with this rape, were not being in any way disciplined in the school, or at least put, or benched, or in any way impacted?
I think it was a combination of both of those reasons, but mostly the belief, which had been first stated by Alexandria Goddard, that more arrests needed to be made and that it would have been easy to arrest more people because there was so much evidence and photographs and videos and just looking at these kids' Twitters and the things that they tweeted on the night that it happened. I mean, it's crazy that people would think it's okay to tweet something like "Song of the Night is definitely Rape Me" by Nirvana. Ugh. And that nothing would happen.
And so Anonymous gets involved. What exactly did Anonymous do?
I mean, it looks like they just hacked the phone and email, Twitter accounts and text messages of multiple people in the town and different boys who Alexandria Goddard had indicated she believed might have been involved and were not charged. And then it seems like they said they found corruption that went beyond this rape case. And they said they found, like, evidence of a widespread gambling ring. So I'm not sure of every single thing that they looked at, but I understand that they pieced together their idea of what happened that night, which also includes the allegation that she was administered a date rape drug via text messages and Twitter and things like that.
Interesting. And so there is also there is also this notion that there's some type of that the police, am I correct in at least there is a theory out there that is being espoused by Anonymous that the police chief was suppressing evidence, not just not acting on it, but was actively suppressing evidence?
Yes, they said that he was, I think, inadvertently deleting evidence. It's not, I think that what they mean is that they're saying he had told kids to do it or told the football coach to tell the kids to delete any evidence that they might have had on their phones. But there's also one point where he said something that made it sound like he was the person responsible with initially looking at all the different phone evidence. And so I think that, and they had uncovered a text message, but like not pictures and things like that. So it seemed kind of fishy.
And so what is happening at this point? I mean, where does the case stand? What's the disposition of the case? My understanding is that there's also Occupy Steubenville has been sort of engaging in protests, and the police chief went down there to argue that that he's been diligent in this situation. Where does it all stand now?
Yeah, there's been kind of an interesting defensive going on in Steubenville now. We're at the Occupy Steubenville rally on Saturday. The chief did come out and say that first then he said that there were no more arrests would be made. So it looks like they're saying, you know, we did everything right that we can. And then he went on to say that you can't arrest somebody basically for making a stupid comment. He said that the video, which was another thing Anonymous leaked, showing a baseball player saying things like, she was so dead, she was deader than Trayvon Martin, and she was more raped than the Duke lacrosse thing, the Duke lacrosse team, saying that, you know, you can't arrest somebody just for saying things that are horrible. But they've also created a website called Steubenville Facts that looks like it's kind of gearing up to be a timeline of the trial. But that also kind of attempts to absolve the sheriff from responsibility because it's the Jefferson County Sheriff Fred Abdallah that Anonymous is targeting, but the Steubenville City Police Sheriff is supposed to have jurisdiction over the case is what the FACT website is saying.
Interesting. And so where is it? When does the trial begin? Is it already begun, or what is the disposition of the case?
I don't think it's begun yet. I think they're saying February it should start moving forward, but it doesn't look like they're filing any additional charges or really looking into whether more people are involved so much as just preparing their cases to go forward with the two defendants that they have. And the lawyers of those defendants, too, have been active in the media and claim that they have a text message from the victim saying, "I know you didn't rape me," or something like that the next day. And that, they just are trying to make it sound like she was not unconscious and was, I guess, enough awake that she knew and consented to what had happened to her.
Ugh. It's a horrible, horrible story. I appreciate your updating us on this. Is there anything else you think that we should know about this story as it goes forward?
Well, since the anonymous leaks, there have been one thing that's been really interesting is it's kind of inspired this coming out movement for victims of rape and sexual assault, and a few of them have been from Steubenville, and one girl she actually posted to Facebook kind of her story about how she was raped, and she went to go file charges, and she said that the prosecutor basically kind of just like talked her out of it and tried to shame her out of doing it, which is what Anonymous is alleging happened in the case again this year. They said that the prosecutor tried to pressure the girl into not filing any charges, and that one of the rapes might have occurred at her house is another accusation Anonymous is making.
At her house, there, one of the rapes took place at the girl's house.
At the prosecutor's home. Her son, is an athlete, and they're saying that one of the parties was at her home, and that one of the sexual assaults that happened on the night in August, because they happened in multiple locations, that one of them might have occurred in her home. And she is saying, of course, that she is innocent, and she's actually already recused herself from the case, as has the local judge.
So the local judge and the prosecutor in Steubenville have recused themselves because, at the very least, there were parties going on that night at their homes, and there's at least allegations by Anonymous, and, you know, people have to take these things. These are just simply allegations. But there are allegations that they're sons may have been involved in this?
The prosecutor there, I think the allegations pretty much go as far as that it happened at her house. Maybe that she had a child who was involved in it.
I see, okay.
But more so, I think it's just they're accusing themselves because they have relationships with a lot of these kids who are in question. It's such a small town, and they have kids their age. You know, they're their friends. The judge said that his granddaughter had dated one of the defendants, and so I mean it's just such a small town that it's hard to separate, I guess, even the judicial system from the football team.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. And so I mean, this really sounds like, I mean, is there some notion as to whether or not the trial will even be held in that? I mean, this sounds like one of those situations where this is a trial that should take place outside of at least that district.
People have called for that, and there were even calls for the sheriff, Fred Abdallah, to take over the investigation, even after people had implicated him in a cover-up, but he said that he would not do that, and, I mean, just that it's going to happen the way it is. I mean, I don't know that they're what the process would be for them to have some an outside prosecutor come in and follow through with the case, but I mean it seems like that's what needs to happen. It's hard to trust what they're saying at all, especially when all of these new stories are coming up about people who were raped in Steubenville and who kind of had similar experiences. It's hard to trust them.
Yeah, I mean, there is something very strange about this town. I mean, I mentioned at the top of the of our conversation about the Justice Department investigation of of corruption with the Steubenville Police Department, specifically dealing with these type of attacks. There's also reportedly the former porno star Tracy Lords, who said that she fled that town after being sexually abused there at the age of 10. RZA, the rapper from Wu-Tang Clan, apparently wrote about this place. I guess he grew up there, and he said it's a very dark, place. You know, I guess in some weird respects. I mean, this is a very strange town.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's part of what makes it so fascinating is that it just seems like it is this kind of dark, horrible place where bad things are allowed to happen. And it's kind of shocking in that respect. But at the same time, I think what makes this story so interesting to people and so appalling is that this is something that we know happens all the time. I mean, girls who are drunk and even sleeping unconscious are regularly taken advantage of and sexually assaulted and blamed for it because it's apparently, you know, their responsibility to make sure that they're not drunk enough, that something like that could happen, rather than talking about the men who choose to rape a girl who was incapacitated. And it's just, it's also related to Penn State. To the Penn State scandal. It's a very small town kind of weird thing, but it also reflects, I think, what's going on in our country at large.
Yeah, really, really disturbing. Kristen Gwynn, Associate Editor of Alternet, thanks so much for taking the time to walk us through this thing. And we'll follow it as this story goes on. But it's fascinating and just horrible, horribly disturbing. But thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
All right, folks. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back with some more of these stories. We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. Just a reminder, you can support this show by becoming a member today. You can support the show by becoming a member tomorrow as well. But becoming a member today at majority.fm/become a member. It is your membership that keeps this show going and provides us with the vast majority of our revenue. In the wake of that story about... that we spoke about the implications of lead the other day. This coming out of, I think it was the journal Environmental Health. We know, and we have known for many years, that mercury pollution affects the development of children's brains. A story, I've mentioned this several times before, a story that came out, I think, in the Times last year around this time, suggested that mercury doesn't just gather in the oceans, as we've been told. I mean, for instance, my wife is pregnant right now, and she is expressly forbidden by her doctor to eat certain types of fish, particularly large fish, which eat other fish, and to not eat too much fish in general, because the lead has built up in the oceans. I mean, excuse me, the mercury has built up in the oceans. Smaller fish get eaten by bigger fish. The mercury does not disperse. It doesn't work its way through your system, whether you're a human or a fish. It builds up. It aggregates. And so pregnant women are told basically no tuna and a whole series of other fish because of this mercury poisoning. We know from reports last year that they are now finding that mercury also builds up in wooded areas. And the implications of that are that insects ingest this mercury from the soil, birds ingest these insects, and it is having a neurological effect on these birds that is threatening their existence. Because if you're a songbird, for instance, and the way that you mate is by hitting a certain note that stimulates other songbirds, and you have some neurological damage because of this mercury, you can't hit that note. And they're finding that some birds can't find their way back to their nests because the slight neurological damage throws off their very sensitive system of navigation. And now, apparently for the first time, a Danish-led European research project, like I said, published in the journal Environmental Health, states that global mercury pollution affects children's brain functions and thus their odds of getting a low-salary job. The total annual loss of life earnings amounts to €9 billion euro dollars. Now, it seems there's no way that you can measure the implications of kids having lower IQs and neurological damage throughout their lives because of mercury, but it is in the context of the way that we do things in this world now. It's very helpful to have some type of dollar figure to put on this. We talked about the implications of the lead story that we're talking. Even if it costs us $20 billion to remediate lead from where it is today, the return on that investment is just massive and almost incalculable. This is the first time scientists have calculated what financial impact it has on the individual when a person's brain function, in terms of a lower IQ, and then thus a poor education and lower income, is impaired as a result of mercury population. Philippe Grandjean, the professor at Department of Environmental Medicine at the University of Southern Denmark, I should say. Our calculations show that every couple of 100,000 children in the EU are born with mercury levels that exceed the maximum limit every year. That's a total loss of 700,000 IQ points, and it adds up to a reduction of $9 billion in lifetime earnings for all the children who are born each year in the EU. They assess the extent to which children have been affected by the brain poison at the fetal stage based on measurements of mercury concentration in the hair of young mothers. A large share of the mercury pollution takes place in developing countries where huge amounts of mercury are used to leach gold from rocks and sediments from mining. And even more so, every year many tons of mercury end up in nature. On that account, the greatest problem, however, is the combustion of coal, coal-fired power plants. Around the world and including this country. The harmful mercury disappears slowly from our environment. A significant portion of the mercury we're exposed to today dates all the way back to the beginning of the industrialization in the mid-1800s. Since then, the amount of harmful mercury in our environment has risen dramatically, so that today's levels are about 10 times higher than the natural occurring levels of mercury. So one more example of how essentially certain industries poison the rest of us, and we end up paying for these externalities. We are subsidizing these businesses with our own health, our own loss of productivity, our own neurological dysfunction across society. I don't know how you deal with that short of governmental regulation saying that you just can't do this. Not that you got to pay a fine, not that you got to kick back people to in a some type of tort case. No, you just can't do it. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back in the better half of the program, Jack Lew, probably our next Treasury Secretary. Income inequality. Isn't it good for everyone? Asks CNBC in one of the hugest pieces of garbage, reporting that I've seen in quite some time. And also, Tony Perkins struggling to deal with this newfangled thing called, am I pronouncing this right? Yoga?
Nailed it.
Yoga. Folks, you can also support this show by buying your Amazon junk through our Amazon link at majority.fm, buying your coffee from justcoffee.coop. It's great coffee. I mean, I would be psyched to tell you about it if it was just giving you a 10% coupon code majority, and just because it's a fair trade outfit, just because it's a co-op, just because they were very supportive of all the Madison protesters back in the day. But it's also great coffee. So do yourself a favor. And remember, this is not officially speaking. Maybe we'll do this officially next week. But it's Give the Majority Report a Good Ranking on iTunes week. Unofficial. Next week will probably be the official one. Give the Majority Report a good review on iTunes. It helps, drives traffic to the show. Any way you can support the program is greatly appreciated.
And when you leave that comment, and when you leave that rating, also leave a comment.
Yeah.
The two together help greatly.
Yeah, all you got to do is say great show.
Favorite show ever.
Well, all right, whatever.
Sam Cedar is a genius.
I'm not going to.
The most brilliant
man
in political news today.
Well, look, I'm not going to tell you what to write, but so I'm okay with Matt telling you. All right, folks, we'll see you in the better half. 646-257-3920. Wait. Let's stop the music. Yesterday, you may have seen this on the Twitter feeds. Yesterday, we had a great libertarian caller call in. I want to say that I appreciate the libertarians calling in, making their case, attempting to make their case. We welcome all callers. Got an email from listener Tina. Hello, Sam and the MR team. Find a female libertarian. I dare you. You will not find one. Not as one as virulent as the ones who call you. We women are too busy dealing in reality, like our children and family and friends. Libertarians are stupid people, and they have found a political view to back up their racism and sexism. But keep them talking. Libertarians become liberals when their ideology hurts people they love. Now, I don't know if I agree with Tina. But if there are libertarians out there and who want to refute that, if there's any female libertarians, by all means.
Wasn't one of our greatest libertarian calls of all time from a female?
I think so.
Wasn't the Ford Pinto libertarian?
There was a brilliant young woman who wanted to know if Ford let people know that the Pinto's gas tank exploded. She was a libertarian.
It's not a bug. It's a feature.
You knock $100 off that for me? Exploding
now,
gas tank.
If you're one of those libertarians who are concerned that there are other libertarians pretending to be libertarians, not pretending, but are wrongly self-identifying as libertarians, by all means, call in and correct. I mean, I'm certainly open to that. That guy yesterday said that he had a problem with incandescent light bulbs being phased out because they're inefficient. However, if a state wanted to allow for slavery, he's okay with that because he's a liberty and freedom lover. Have I accurately described that? I don't think I've.
That is absolutely accurate. And what's the only response besides laughing? But you know what? Last week.
Well, no, Michael, that's rude.
I apologize.
No, I mean, look, that's his opinion. And I think it's important that people hear these opinions. Because I'll tell you something. You know, Glenn Beck now is positioning himself as a libertarian, right? He's going to start a new libertarian international news network.
Because libertarianism is the cool in thing now.
It's the cool in thing. We know that what's-his-face, Alex Jones, he also claims that he's a libertarian, I guess. And, you know.
In fact, at the event I was at in Vegas, when I was walking the floor before the podcast awards earlier that day, I was talking to some of the people, and one of the people I was talking to was there with a company. He was like a tech guy, and I was talking with him, and he was asking about the show, and I was like telling him about the different segments that people really love on the show, and I brought up the libertarian calls and how we, you know, debate them and debunk them, and he's like, "You guys don't like libertarians?" Like, he was shocked. He was like, "How do you not love, like, people who like liberty and freedom?"
Yeah. Well, you know,
because we don't cool like slavery. Thing. What I was going to say, though, in fairness, was there was some guy who called last week who we disagreed with, you disagree with, but he made, like, he was, you know, a smart guy. He made some interesting points.
Yes.
And so that's also possible.
No, it is all possible. All right, folks. We'll see you in the better half. 646-257-3920 is the number. 646-257-3920. You can IM me. I have neglected to turn on my IM, and I am doing so now at Majority FM. We'll be right back after this.